Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we take a look at maybe your aches and pains. If you've had any injuries during this fall season, I have. I've been complaining dearly about my left knee. To our two guests today, Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum. Lori's a physical therapist and athletic trainer with the UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. Also a graduate program director for the Rocky Mountain University of Health Professions in Provo, Utah. Lori, good to see you again.
It is good to be here.
And Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, great to have you here, Jill.
It's great to be here, too.
What am I doing? Oh, let's see. Look,
you're silencing her, which isn't a bad idea.
It always works better if I turn the mic on. Oh, golly. So Jill, by the way, is an assistant professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison, also a staff physical therapist, and works a bit with Bill Boisenall.
I do work with Bill. His office is right across the hall from mine.
Well, we already have lots of calls, but you can join in, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234. You have a question or comment. Do you guys see much difference this time of the year? Are new aches and pains coming in?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, football and soccer. I mean, if I listed the number of injuries just on my son's soccer team, you know, he's a U14 and mm-hmm. they play pretty intense. They've had a number of injuries already this year. And they've only played in two tournaments.
Right. And my husband and I are both physical therapists, and we have done a lot of curbside consults in our neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Hey, can you come and take a look at this? And hey, you know, my son did this playing football. I just looked at a kid's hand yesterday.
Yep. A lot of football.
Do you have a front porch? I can just picture you guys sitting out in the front porch with a big, long line of people.
Yep. We've assessed people on our front lawn. Lay down on our yard.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And I've done the same in my living room. I'm kind of out in the country, and so people don't like to make the trip into town. They say, well, I say, well, just come by my house. A lot of cross-country injuries, a lot of overuse stuff from cross-country. People aren't used to running at that frequency and intensity. And, you know, football, I mean, what else can you say? You know, you put on pads and helmets and you hit other people. Yeah. I mean, you're going to get hurt.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
It's the nature of the game. So,
well, it looks like other people have gotten hurt as well besides me and the people you were talking about. I don't know if football or if it's soccer or what it is, but let's go to Jeremy in Milwaukee first, find out what's on his mind. Hi, Jeremy.
Hello. How are you doing?
Great. What can we do for you?
Yeah, last week, it's been about a week, I've been working out pretty intensely during the day, and I guess I didn't get a proper cool down. And I laid down, and when I woke up, the upper portion of my hamstring feels like it's pinching a nerve. The pain has been pretty, you know, constant day and night. Beyond stretching it out and getting it warm, I don't know what else I can do.
Well,
Jill, go ahead.
If it truly is a hamstring strain, do you remember doing anything during your workout, Jeremy, that you can think, cause and effect?
No, just a really intense workout, maybe not a proper cool down is the only thing. And when I went to sleep, I just took an hour nap and I had the fan on. I don't know if that's like a wife's tale or if that's true. It was pretty much right on that spot.
Yeah, probably not. So, what makes you think it's a pinched nerve? Are you getting like shooting, stabbing, radiating pain down your leg? Does it go all the way down your leg, or how far does it go down?
The hamstring, and now my calf has just become like a solid rock of cramped muscle.
So, those things concern both Lori and I that it could be coming from actually your back.
Yep.
Even if you don't have low back pain, those symptoms sound like nerve kind of things that could very well be coming from your lower back.
Or from in your buttocks. Your sciatic nerve can get...
it's that area.
Mm-hmm. It can start in your low back. It can get pinched as it goes through your buttock muscles or down the back of your leg. So is it getting better?
No, it's been the same. Like,
all right,
I'll stretch it out, it'll be fine, but if I lay down, it's right back to where it started.
Yeah, yeah, that's something that needs to be looked at. If it was just a strained muscle and you overdid it and you didn't cool down and it was a muscular issue, it would be getting better. And after you got up and stretched and moved around, it would gradually get better. It wouldn't go right back to where it started from after you lay down and rest again. So this is something that needs to be looked at. So you can, you know, look for a physical therapist in your area. You can see your primary care physician, but somebody needs to take a look at it, because the origin of the pain could be from any of a number of sites, and someone needs to figure out where that is, because that's where the treatment should be directed.
All right. There you go. Good luck.
All right,
thank you for
calling. Good luck with that.
Paul in Decorah, Iowa, turning to you next. Hi.
Hey, how you doing?
Perfect. Thanks for calling.
All right. So here's the story. On Saturday, I was doing a running race, and I really did a number on my calf, strained tear of some type. And a little bit of history. Last week, I run 2 to 3 times a week. It's not something new, but last week I did a long run and I tried more of this 4-foot running. And I noticed near the end of the run, that calf started bothering and my gait and stride changed.
Mm-hmm.
So I laid off everything, didn't do anything, and it felt fine. Well, about half mile into the race, and it was fairly hilly, I felt it come on, and by 3/4 of a mile, I was walking. And
this
point, I walk with the limp. So a couple questions. What do you recommend besides laying off? I also notice these foam rollers that people will use on various, you know, lower extremities and so on. What does that do?
Well, let's start with first. Is it your Achilles muscle or is it your tendon?
It's the calf muscle. It's not the Achilles.
Oh, that's good. That's much better. So then the foam roller, it does a deep tissue massage, and that can help relax some of those muscle fibers, decrease some of that tension that you have there. The toe running, the 4-foot running, as you have so vividly explained, the mechanics of that are very different from a heel strike. And what happens is your calf muscles do much of the shock absorption rather than the biomechanics of your foot. So you really overused your calf muscles, and then you had an insufficient rest. And when you went back again, they just flared up. So you're going to have to back off on that. You're going to need to do some stretching and work your way back up into your running again, slowly, as your calf muscles tolerate. But lots of stretching. I think the foam roller would be a reasonable thing to try. And if you decide you're going to be a 4-foot runner, you're going to have to work into it gradually.
Yeah, it's one of those things that you need to really work at slowly. Most people say you need to, you know, slowly introduce it by about 10%. So 10% of your running time, you can be a 4-foot runner and then go back to your regular running pattern the rest of the time and increase it by about 5% per week. So it's a very long transition to change your running strike like that. And with regards to the foam roller, in the athletic department, we use them all the time. And if you're going to purchase one, which I think is a great strategy, purchase one that's thicker or denser. They're typically black in color. That would be better. If you want to do the poor man's version of it, go to Home Depot, buy some PVC pipe, get it cut in a 3-foot length, and wrap something around it so it's got a little cushion to it, and that works just as well.
Oh, yeah, I saw at the Y this morning. They have a black one and white one.
Okay. Yeah, I would get the black.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Appreciate
and
it.
The other thing about the 10% a week, it's probably, or 10% of your running, rather than doing it in one big chunk, you can break into it more slowly if you do a fartlek kind of deal where you run with your regular stride and then for a certain distance or amount of time, then you do the toe running and then you go back to the heel, run with your regular foot strike and then go up onto your toes again for either a time-based or a distance-based kind of thing. And you can do the math on it.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for calling. Appreciate your call very much. Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Missenbaum, our guests today as we talk about avoiding injuries with fall sports and other activities. Great to have them along. Thank you for listening. You can call us at 1-800-642-1234. Go to my Facebook page. You can post a question there at the Larry Mueller Show. And Derek and Little Shoot, turn to you next. Hi, Derek.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I have an old hockey injury. It's a shoulder injury, and I do about 60 push-ups every other day. And lately, I noticed it's been clicking. This is a reoccurring thing about twice a year. It really gets sore. It's kind of on the front of the shoulder. Do you have any ideas what that might be?
Is it sore while you do the push-ups or
no,
after
I
you do?
No, I don't get any. Yeah, I don't get any pain while I'm doing push-ups.
It's
but
afterwards.
I noticed it's clicking lately.
Okay, is the clicking painful?
No.
Okay, well, that's a good sign because a lot of people have clicks and creaks and cracks in their joint. And as long as it's not painful, we don't get hugely concerned about that. The pain in the front of your shoulder could be a couple things. If it's right in kind of in front of the ball, I think it's a little bit of biceps tendonitis. You're using your biceps tendon to work or stabilize your shoulder. The other thing it could be your AC joint, which is the joint a little bit on top of your shoulder that can really be irritated if you do a lot of push-ups. How old are you?
I'm 41.
Okay, so you're kind of getting in that age where AC arthritis starts coming into play. So it could also be your AC joint.
Yeah, so if you're doing 60 push-ups every other day, you might want to, you know, titrate those out to 30 every day or something else. Or if you're getting a lot of clicking, you may need to back off and supplement your exercise program with a different kind of exercise that works your shoulder muscles in a different direction.
Okay.
All right. Good luck. Thank you. Appreciate the call. Jill in Mount Horeb, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I just have a question that I was wondering if either of the speakers had any opinions on the sort of rocker sole shape up and other brand shoes that are used in athletics these days.
Well, more people use them recreationally for walking and things like that. We don't see them on the athletic field at all. But for walking, it's one of those where you should try it out and see if it works for you. Just as the earth shoes we had however many years ago where you had your heel lower than your toes, there are certain foot types that do well with certain kinds of shoes and certain foot types that don't like it at all. So depending upon your specific physical characteristics, the amount of mobility you have in your foot and ankle, the amount of mobility you have, for example, in your big toe, the amount of balance you have. People who have balance difficulties often are challenged in rocker shoes. I know people with knee arthritis who like using them because of the way it modifies their gait, but it's really very individual, and I wouldn't be comfortable making any blanket statements that they're great or they're not great. It's pretty individual.
And just like the five finger shoes, those kind of minimalistic shoes that people go out and run in, things like that, it's the break-in time, like we talked about with the previous caller, needs to be a long break-in time. Break them in very slowly. You don't want to go out and, you know, walk 4 or 5 miles in them the first day, because it really does change your mechanics of your foot, ankle, knee, hip, even your back. So you want to go nice and slowly if you choose to go down that path. No pun intended.
Yeah, I watched a couple of guys at a marathon 2 weeks ago, mm-hmm. with those shoes, and I'm looking at them and thinking, oh man, I hope. They were doing the full marathon, mm-hmm. and I was mm-hmm. hoping that they had done a little practicing with those
shoes.
Yes,
well, we'll see if they call.
They may call. Oh, thanks, Jill, for calling. Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, our guests today, UW Sports Medicine experts, and they are with us until 12:30 today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. When you call, Judith Sears Poisson is the friendly, smiling voice that you will hear on the other side of the phone. And me, I'm Larry Mueller. Talking avoiding injuries with fall sports and activities and how to deal with those injuries when they do come with Lori Tyne Brody, an athletic trainer with UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center, and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, who is an assistant prof in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. Great to have them along. Thank you for listening. We had a message from Phil, who's 32 years old and is going to have meniscus repair surgery on both knees soon. I can't imagine he'd be doing both at the same time. Maybe, I don't know. He'd like to know if you two think that a regular upright exercise bike is or a recumbent would be better for getting moving again after surgery.
Well, I don't think it matters very much in the absence of any other kind of injury. If you have a preference for one style over another, that's fine. But other than that, the recumbent basically gives you back support, and it changes the angle of your hip and leg. But in terms of the knee and the motion at the knee, it doesn't matter so much. So I would say whichever one is most comfortable for him, and he's most likely to actually get on and ride.
Exactly, exactly.
What? Would you have meniscus surgery done on both your knees at the same time?
No.
Well, and it says that he's having a meniscal repair, which is very different than a meniscectomy where they take your meniscus out. So the rehab after somebody has their meniscus repaired is much longer. It's more intense because you get to save your meniscus.
And you tend to be non-weight-bearing. So I don't know how you can be non-weight-bearing on both knees except in a wheelchair.
Right.
Yeah.
So... We're not sure what's going on. And maybe he's having them done sequentially.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. He just said soon. So.
And George in Glendale has a question for you. Let's go to George. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. First-time caller, long-time listener. Love your program.
Thank you.
Wondered about the causes and possible cures of sore and swollen ankles. I was recently on a cruise, and we would take four-hour tours while you're standing and sitting on hard concrete floors. My ankles would swell up and be extremely sore. What's causing that?
Well, how long did it take for the swelling and soreness to go away afterwards?
Well, if if I put my feet up when I got back and then, of course, went to bed, the next morning, the swelling's down some.
Okay.
Are you still having this problem, George, since you went on your cruise, or has it gone away since you're back home?
Well, we got home yesterday, and I'm not.
Oh, well, that explains it.
Exactly, exactly.
Well, I'm not planning to be on my feet a whole heck of a lot today.
Yeah.
No, that's probably a good idea.
Well, there are a broad range of things. The most obvious would be some arthritis in your ankles. If you have some limited motion and you have some arthritis on there and you're on your feet for long periods of time and you're not used to that, mm-hmm. That arthritis can flare up and swell in your ankles just like it can in your knees. So that's the first and most obvious.
Right. Especially if you're walking on hard concrete, which you probably were. And if you do a lot of static standing where you're standing and not moving around a lot, that can also be problematic.
Right. The more you're just standing, the more the fluid just sits there and pools. And when they're in that dependent position. And when you said you put your feet up and it helps, that's all good. The other thing you have to keep in mind is if it's related to any kind of claudication in your back or any cardiovascular issues. If you've had swelling in your legs or ankles any other times when you're at home, et cetera, then that's a medical issue to address with your doctor.
Okay.
The other thing you have to think about is the food you ate on your cruise. You know, sometimes mm-hmm. the food may be a little bit higher in sodium, and that has a tendency to cause us to retain our fluid. So if your diet, the diet could be a factor as well. You know, you're on a cruise, you're on vacation. We all know
we
eat on vacation.
So I just keep an eye on it over the next week as you resume your normal activities. And if you're still having a problem, I'd start with my primary care physician.
I agree.
There you go. Thanks a lot, George.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, appreciate it. And Larry in Green Bay. Hi, thank you for calling.
Yeah, hey, I got a rotator cuff tear, and it's a complete tear, and I had surgery on it, and it tore again.
Oh dear!
And I'm wondering, what's that?
Oh dear!
So you had a repair? You had a repair the first time?
Yeah, actually, I had a repair twice, and it tore twice.
Oh. Okay. Oh.
I'm wondering. Is it possible to do exercises and skip the surgery again and build strength through that way? So I did start doing some exercises, that I got when I after my surgery, and it seems like it's getting stronger.
Yeah. Larry, can I ask how old you are?
53.
Okay. And are you in a pretty physical occupation?
Yeah, no.
Okay. All right. Well, let me ask you this. How much demand do you put on your shoulder in the course of a normal day?
Quite a bit.
Okay. Well, if you're working overhead all day long with weight, as in hammering, lifting, climbing kinds of stuff, it's going to be tough. You'll have you know, you'll have a high likelihood of pain. It is possible to certainly strengthen the supporting muscles. You know, research on cadavers shows that over the course of your lifetime, as you move into your 60s, 70s, and 80s, everybody has rotator cuff tears. It's just a matter of how much. Most of those people are asymptomatic and never have problems because other muscles compensate for it. So if you have a good strengthening program, you can recover from this. And frankly, I would not be confident that any kind of repair after two tears, I can't imagine that any surgeon, A, would take it on, or right. B, that it could be successful, because what's left of your rotator cuff has to be something on the order of wet spaghetti. So
yeah, and so you get concerned about tissue quality, and right. even if they sew those ends back together, it could be like sewing together two sticks of butter.
Yeah.
So then you're concerned about, oh, the surgery, you know, the repair isn't going to hold. And maybe going the conservative route with lots of exercises, teaching other muscles to substitute, like Lori said, is a good strategy.
Yeah, I think that's the way to go. I think you're on the right track, Larry. And if you need, yeah. if you don't have any guidance from your physical therapist, I'd go in and get a couple visits with them so that they can help you identify the right exercises to do to get those muscles going.
Yeah, because I don't have much pain, and I do climbing, and if that doesn't seem to bother me at all.
Right.
That's great.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. There you go.
So let's keep it that way. That's the idea.
That's the idea. Good luck, yeah. Larry. Thank you very much for calling. Olivia emailed us, said about 6 weeks ago she strained her pec muscles at work, has had trouble avoiding restraining them again during the healing process. Seems doing everyday activities sets it off again, even just wiping my kitchen countertops off or doing some non-weight-bearing tasks sets it off. Any suggestions to speed up the healing?
Well, I would avoid lifting at any cost. You know, you really need those muscles to kind of heal. She probably needs to do a little bit of stretching to get the muscles. That'll help with the healing process as well. Standing in a corner and bringing your arms up and out to the side and giving the pecs a little stretch will help.
And I'm kind of wondering about the diagnosis.
Yes.
So it seems to me that she's probably self-diagnosed this problem, that she strained her pec muscles. And it's been 6 weeks and it's not getting better. So it makes me wonder if she's on the right track on the diagnosis.
What else would it be?
Well, I mean, if she's having, you know, chest pain, then mm-hmm. you think about rib issues. Mm-hmm. If she had a rib fracture,
sure.
if it was an acute injury, you can develop inflammation at the pec attachment to the sternum. If she did, again, had some kind of traumatic injury, she could have developed what's called a costochondritis, where you get an inflammation of the joints where the ribs attach to the sternum. She could also have a concurrent rotator cuff problem, which can manifest as similar symptoms in the front of the shoulder. And those same kinds of activities, such as wiping and weight bearing, will hurt it. So I'd say that given that it's been 6 weeks and she's not getting better, if she hasn't seen anybody, she should get in to see somebody, because otherwise it's just more time elapsed since the initial injury. And she doesn't seem to be heading the right direction.
Dave in Wanakee. Hi, thank you for calling.
Yes, hello. For a few years now, I've had pain in my left shoulder. I'm fairly certain it's due to how I sleep at night. I'll find myself waking up with my head on my arm. Oh. I'll wake up in the morning and have, like, tingling in my fingers. Lately, I've started feeling a pain in my on the left side of my sternum as well, and I'm wondering if that might be related. I've never seen anybody about this.
When you, Dave, when you wake up, is your head tilted to the side and kind of resting on your shoulder?
What it usually is I'll have a pillow bunched up under my head and
okay.
kind of the toward the back of my head.
Okay.
And my head sort of resting on the pillow, and the okay. pillow can be resting on my arm.
Okay, okay.
You know.
So the fact that you're in this position, first of all, with your arm overhead for a prolonged period of time, that's not healthy for your shoulder joint. And within that area run all of our nerves that go down and all the way down to our fingers and hands. So you could be getting a little bit of a pinched nerve solely by the position that you're being in by sleeping with your arm overhead at night. The other thing I wouldn't completely rule out is that you still could have some contributions from the neck coming in here as well.
Yeah, it's possible. That position, and also if your elbow is flexed, you can also get some nerve compression in your elbow or even at your wrist. So if you have your shoulder flexed, elbow, wrist, all those things, you can get nerve pressure in any of those. So I think you're right that changing your arm position at night is going to be the key. So That's the first thing you need to figure out and see how far that gets you. If you're still having symptoms and you're not sleeping like that, then you need to go in and have somebody do a better exam to figure out what's going on. And the side of the sternum, I'm not sure what that's about, except when your arm's in that overhead position, you have a lot of traction on your pec muscles and some of the other chest muscles that attach there. Mm-hmm. So that it could be contributing to that, too.
Right. I would change my sleep position and monitor the sternal pain and see what happens with that. And if neither of them are changing, I'd see my physician.
Thank you very much for calling, Dave. Ron in La Crosse, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. Good morning.
Morning.
Could I just go ahead and start with the
story?
Yeah,
what's on your mind?
Okay, I want to make sure you got a pencil and paper. And,
oh, we're going. We're writing already, Ron.
Okay, 2008, I fell off a scaffolding and I broke my back in three places and my left knee had to be replaced. Since then, they have done the tibioplasty and a metal insert, 3 and 4. And in 2010, it was an auto accident, broke the same leg.
Oh.
And the hip. Left hip. So the doctor said that I have osteoporosis so bad, they replaced the knee, but they said there's nothing more they can do. They put a new knee in with the larger stems on it. And now the joint is bent at the knee. So it's called a slip, he said. And they said three professional, the best, one from Mayo and two from the vicinity, knee doctors said there's nothing they can do. So they put me on 30 milligrams of slow-release morphine. Am I on that for the rest of my life or what?
So when you say your knee is bent, do you mean that you can't fully straighten it? Or tell us what you mean by it when your knee is bent.
No, the joint itself, I call it the horseshoe top part of the joint.
Uh-huh.
Where it meets the knee itself, that little section is bent out to where it rubs against there, and it's on the very outside of the inside of the knee. The leg, and it hurts all the time. So, and now I have to wear a brace so I don't fall down.
Okay, so
the question is there anything they can do? I'm 65 years old. I'm on osteoporosis medicine all the time now. And if there's nothing and I have to live on drugs all my life, then I need some outside opinions.
Well, what have you, I presume you've been through therapy of different sorts for this?
Oh, yes.
Okay, and have you ever been in a pool for therapy?
Yes, I use a pool.
Okay.
But see, it still hurts my leg when I kick or walk in the pool. They figured out a complete pool program for me because my back was broken.
Sure,
my leg.
Sure, right. Well, I would say that they have done pretty much for you what is available.
Yeah, I asked them, what are you going to do? And they said, you have to live with it. And I
Yeah, well, you know, there's no surgery so bad that it can't be made worse by another one. So, I'd say that it sounds like you're doing the right things. You're doing the right therapy. You're in the pool. They've got a specially designed program for you, and they'll continue to monitor you. The other piece of it would be if you have not been to a pain clinic.
Mm-hmm. And, yes, I just went through a pain clinic.
Okay, great. That would be
a month isolation.
Yeah, yeah. So those folks also help with that end of it. So I'd say, you know, carry on as best you can.
Yeah.
Well, my last thought was to go. I'm a veteran, 30-year veteran, and right now it looks like the veterans have the most experience on legs, arms, and you know, body parts that have been blown apart and refixed. That maybe the Veterans Administration might look at this leg and see what they can come up with.
It's certainly worth a try.
It certainly doesn't hurt to get another opinion.
Exactly.
That's for sure.
Exactly. Yeah. Information never hurts. So.
Exactly.
Yeah. So right now I'm stuck on the morphine stuff. Right?
Yeah.
For now, call back on another time after you have a chance. After you've had a chance to talk to those other folks and let us know how it's going. We'd like to know, Ron.
Yeah, I will. I'll keep my note handy.
Yep, and keep up your exercises.
Yeah, it's very
important. Thanks for calling. That's too bad. Keith in Dodgeville, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I've got a question about knee pain from riding a bike. I've had a little bit of pain on the outside of my right knee in the past, but changing the position of my feet seems to help. I just bought a fancy new bike with clipless pedals and all.
Mm-hmm.
And the pain has come back quite strongly.
When you purchased your bike, did you get it professionally fit for you, Keith?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we spent a couple hours doing
good.
That.
Good, okay. And is the pain on the outside of your knee, is it only with biking? Do you sore after? Tell us a little bit about that.
It'll be sore for about a day. I ice it, and occasionally I can feel twinges going up and down stairs.
Okay.
It seems to go away if I don't go out on the bike.
Okay. Yeah. It sounds like your IT band down there could be irritated right where it crosses your knee joint. So it sounds like it's a pretty localized pain. The fact that you have this pain when you go up and down stairs makes me think that it's a little bit of irritation of your iliotibial band. I guess I would suggest doing some really good IT band stretching, and you would be a great candidate to purchase a foam roller to roll out your IT band.
Yeah, yeah. And did you had dealt with this problem previously when you changed your foot position?
Yes, on the pedal, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you may want to unclip your feet for a while and find that sweet spot of the right position of your foot in the pedal and adjust your pedals to that position. So even though the professional bike fitters may look at you and say, oh, this is your right position, there's something about you, and you know that that's not the right position for you. So you need to find that sweet spot and get your foot in that position.
Okay, now this band you're talking about that runs down the outside of the knee and crosses the knee?
Yes.
Ah.
It's called but most people call it their IT band or their iliotibial band, and it's a band of connective tissue that crosses your hip and your knee. So both hip and knee position kind of play into its tightness.
Ah, okay. So. And this foam roller that you mentioned, what is that?
Well, it's a piece of equipment that typically has been used in physical therapy clinics and therapeutically, but it's really kind of made its way into the homes of people who are healthy and active, and it's a cylindrical piece of very dense, hard foam, and you can roll back and forth on it and kind of do a deep tissue massage. And that's one of probably the best ways to stretch your IT band. If you just Google foam roller and IT band, I'm sure you can find YouTube videos of it and everything.
Mm-hmm. And I roll this up and down the outside of my knee and leg there?
When you're laying on it, yes.
Yeah. Okay, and I'm assuming that ice...
Yes, ice is great. Yep. Ice is great.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, but you're good to get on this now before it gets any worse.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Good luck. Okay. Thank you. Thanks very much for calling, Keith. Steve in Montreal, hi. Thank you for calling.
Well, good morning. This is Steve from beautiful Montreal. On your taking your rotator cuff comments, one more step. I've been through the agonies of the rotator cuff. And then things got better, and then, oh, boy, I couldn't sleep at night, couldn't roll over, went back to see the surgeon, I got a script for some hydrocodone, and a brochure on frozen shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it is somewhat improving, but can you amplify a bit on the frozen shoulder phenomena, please?
Sure. Well, first of all, is your motion limited?
No. I say my motion is, range of motion is what it was 5 years ago. It's good.
So, and this is not rotator cuff, or is it frozen shoulder and rotator cuff? People often have questions. What's the difference?
Yes.
Well, a frozen shoulder is when you lose motion in your shoulder. You can't raise it overhead. You can't reach behind your head to comb the back of your head. You can't reach your arm behind you to do self care, hook your bra, all those
things. Tuck your shirt in your pants. Take your wallet out of your
Your shoulder gets really stiff, and most of the time, there's no known cause for it. Although things like rotator cuff tendonitis can precede it. So sometimes a rotator cuff problem or a bursitis or a tendonitis can roll into a frozen shoulder, but they're two distinct problems.
That's right. I say, you know, a frozen shoulder could be caused by rotator cuff tendonitis gone bad. So the patient's shoulder hurts because they have some rotator cuff tendonitis, and they choose not to move it. And then the next thing you know, they can't move it because the balloon that the shoulder is in kind of adheres down and gets tight and stiff. And these can be incredibly painful. The classic thing is most people with shoulder pathology really have a difficult time sleeping. He said he had pain at night, and that is very common with people with all shoulder pathology, I think.
Yeah, this middle-aged maintenance is getting to be rather nonsense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hear you. So the prognosis...
I can scratch my backside.
Good. Okay, good. Well, you have to keep it the motion. Eventually, you'll get it, but really, the timeline for it, 18 months. You're looking at 18 months before you get most of your motion back, and that is just diligent day after day after day, continued stretching, and it hurts.
Okay.
So
yeah. Good luck.
The one thing I will tell you is you want to do your exercises in a somewhat pain-free range. This isn't one of those things where you stretch so hard it's excruciatingly painful, because most people think you kind of re-inflame the joint. So you want it to be a little uncomfortable while you stretch it, but not excruciating. Okay, and there's a fine line between that.
There you go, Steve. Thanks a lot for calling. Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum are guests today as we talk about avoiding injury and dealing with those aches and pains and sprains and strains. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for listening in here on the Ideas Network. Physical therapists from the UW, Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, our guests today. Thank you for listening. And we actually have a line or two open. You can reach us at 1-800-642-1234 with your question. We'll get you on pretty quick. Bill in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Bill.
Hi. I a couple years ago had two frozen shoulders from some middle-aged sports activities and went into a physical therapist in town here. And after she decided that my range of motion was pretty bad, she felt the top of my shoulder, put her fist on top of my shoulder, and then with her other hand down, and I gained 50% of range of motion from that one manipulation she did. Could you explain what that might have been?
We missed exactly what happened. You broke up.
Yeah, you dropped out right when you were explaining it.
So as she...
She put her fist on top of...
fist on top of my shoulder, and then with her other fist hit it down really hard. And I gained half of my mobility with that one manipulation.
It sounded like a strong inferior glide. Yeah. So what happens is if you picture your shoulder girdle, Jill described it as a balloon. It's in a capsule that's like a balloon. And the underneath, it has these redundant folds like an accordion pleats. That's so that you can get your arm all the way overhead and there's enough motion in that capsule, enough range to allow your arm to get all the way overhead in these really unique positions that, for example, baseball pitchers get into. So what happens is a lot of times those accordion pleats will adhere together. So instead of expanding as you move your arm, they're all stuck together. So one of the procedures is to take your arm and take that ball of the ball and socket and force it down rapidly to see if you can break up some of those adhesions.
Oh.
It's kind of what the surgeon does in a manipulation, except we don't usually do it with the patient conscious. But every once in a while, you can get away with it.
Right. So it's basically trying to stretch the balloon back out from the inside. So it's an inside-out kind of procedure.
Yeah. Now, there's a couple precautions with that. The first being, if you have osteoporosis and you do a very strong manipulation, you
break a bone.
You risk fracturing a bone. So there aren't a lot of PTs who are terribly comfortable doing that. But if you're a young, healthy individual with apparent good bone quality, it would be a reasonable thing to try. But typically, PTs would do what's called a mobilization, and they would put you in that position, and they would push down on that ball and the ball and socket until they get to the very end of the range, and they would kind of oscillate it at that point to try to stretch it and loosen it rather than to abruptly break it.
Mm-hmm.
Could you name the procedure one more time?
I would say it's an inferior glide manipulation.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for calling. An email from Maggie. My husband has two meniscus surgeries on the same knee in the last year. After the first, they think he re-injured it. After the second, it seemed much better until a few months ago. Now it throbs every night, bothers him a lot during the day. Probably re-injured it again. He walks every day, does exercise to strengthen it, dreading another surgery. Any ideas on what he can do, or is this just what he should expect from now on? He's 53.
I definitely don't think this is what he should expect from now on. I don't think that's the case at all. It's unfortunate that he's had these two meniscal surgeries and had some failures involved. You know, doing exercises for it is fantastic. I would start looking at the walking a little bit. That's a loaded weight-bearing activity, and you always have to question shoe wear, surface, things like that. And with regards to his exercises, I would make sure that they're appropriate and make sure he's not doing something that can be really irritating the inside of his knee.
Yeah, so if he hasn't seen a physical therapist and had his exercises retooled, you know, chances are he's got some arthritis in there, which is why it is continuing to be re-injured. If he has a rough joint surface, that's scuffing it up. I don't know if he's tried injections of things like Synvisc that can help prolong the life of the knee. If he has, you know, a meniscus that is torn and has a piece that's irritating his joint surfaces, he's going to need a procedure to get that out of there because it's going to continue to advance any existing arthritis. So he should get it evaluated so that he has the right information to make an appropriate decision. And there's research that shows that, for example, sheep who walk on wood chips have better looking knees than those that walk on cement. So if he can find a place, as Jill said, to walk on a surface that's more forgiving than walking up and down the streets in his neighborhood, that's going to help. He needs to keep his weight down. He needs to be doing the right exercises,
exactly,
just as she said.
And one of the things I always suggest for people who are walking and are concerned if they're going to have pain is you can walk on a track because the track is soft, it's forgiving. And you know what? If your knee starts hurting, your car is right there versus an out and back where you get 2 miles away from your car and your knee hurts and you have to turn around and walk back. And I know walking on a track is not fun. It's not, you know, beautiful or anything like that. But in the short term, to make sure that your knee can tolerate it, sometimes that's a really good strategy to find the local high school track.
Mary in Menasha has a question for you. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I think I got a lot of my question answered. In the past 6 weeks, my left knee has been giving me some trouble, and it turns out through an MRI, I found out that I have two tears in my meniscus. One is medial, and one is an oblique tear, more interior. This is a knee that has a little bit of arthritis in it, too, and tomorrow, actually, I'm meeting with the orthopedic surgeon office that I went through for the MRI. So I'm just wondering, is it a foregone conclusion that I do surgery or?
No.
Okay.
There are parts of your meniscus that can actually heal on its own. So the kind of the periphery of your meniscus, if you have small tears in the periphery, because they have some blood flow there, those can actually heal. It's when the tears are deeper inside your knee where we know they don't tear or they don't heal, excuse me. And just because you have a tear doesn't mean that you're doomed to go off to the OR.
Exactly. Okay. And there's research that shows that meniscus tears that are left in place, as long as they are not aggravating your joint surfaces or scuffing up your joint surfaces or flipping in and out of the joint or things like that, actually help support the long-term health of that joint. So just because it's torn doesn't mean it necessarily has to come out. It has to be causing a problem. My guess is there are, because that's why you got an MRI.
Right. Yeah, it had been, and since then, pretty active. I haven't been. I'm afraid of re-inflaming. It got big and red and hot.
Okay, yeah.
So I have been biking, and that doesn't seem to bother it. But, you know, I really want to avoid surgery if I can, but if, wanted your advice.
Well, you just have a frank discussion with him about the prognosis based upon the results of that MRI. What's going to happen if you leave it alone? And, you know, your surgeon should be able to give you an educated guess about how it's going to play out.
Okay.
Good luck.
No, thanks for that info.
Yeah.
Thanks, Mary. And Matt in Beloit. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Yeah. I've got some lower back pain. Like, my back itself doesn't hurt, but I get some very infrequent, kind of sporadic sciatic pain on the left side. And I've had a couple of lower back injuries. I do see a chiropractor, and he's kind of said, you know, you threw your back out. And he's been doing adjustments to work with that, and I just kind of wanted to get your thoughts on that.
So, and are you doing any kind of exercise to strengthen your back and maintain the strength of your hips and pelvis and low back?
Yes, I do. I actually have like some workout videos, the P90 workout videos. I do. There, you know, a lot of push-ups and upper body weights and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I do to maintain strength. I'm pretty active. I coach volleyball, so I'm in on that. You know, I play with the guys while I'm there and doing things like that. I actually injured my back the first time playing volleyball, reaching back behind me to try to hit a ball and hurt my lower back. I'm like in my mid-30s and just kind of, I mean, I think I'm in good health, but every now and again I'll just get this sharp shooting pain that just shoots down the leg, you know, and almost, I mean, I got to stop whatever I'm doing and kind of wait. It lasts like 10 to 15 seconds, and then it kind of goes away and doesn't happen for another, you know, sometimes it'll happen 2-3 times a day, and then it won't happen for a week, you know.
So how, so you're getting this on a weekly basis?
I'd say around there, yeah.
Oh, that's
it's. Yeah. If there's, like, really no pattern to it that I can tell.
Okay, well, that makes it very difficult to sort out. So it's much easier to figure out what's going on when you have a pattern. And when you had your initial injury playing volleyball, did you see anybody? Did you get any kind of diagnosis?
I did. I went to a chiropractor. He looked at it and said, he gave me a neurosurgeon's name and said, you know, I can do this for you, but other than that, you want to talk to someone else. I went to see a neurosurgeon, and but by the time I was able to get in to see him, I had pretty much healed.
Right,
and,
okay.
You know, because he was, their schedules are busy.
Right, exactly. Well, having these kind of symptoms on a weekly basis is too often for a guy your age. So,
yeah, and I know you're
right. So I know you're seeing the chiropractor, but you might want to get another evaluation. Go in and see a physical therapist and see what they have to say. I wonder if he had a spondy with that extension injury. Sometimes you can get a small fracture in your back. When you have that kind of an extension and rotation injury in volleyball or gymnastics or things like that. So I wonder if you have kind of a predisposition and a little bit of instability in your low back. But getting your exercises tweaked and
modifications made in the P90X is probably a good strategy. The other thing that comes to mind for me is if you had this back injury and you've laid down some scar tissue, sometimes there's scar tissue there that can kind of make it put some drag in your nervous system or make your nerve have difficulty gliding. Your nerve has to glide just like when you dental floss your teeth, has to glide back and forth. Same concept. Nerves have to glide in sheaths, etc. And if you laid down a little bit of scar tissue there when you had that back trauma, your nerve could just be getting a little snagged up. And a physical therapist would know what neurodynamic test to do to see that. And that can be fixed or corrected with exercise.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Matt.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call. And Brett in Janesville. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, my history is I've had two fusions in my back, one in the lumbar area, one in the cervical area, and now I'm dealing with peripheral neuropathy in my legs. I have to deal with extreme pain for that, and I was just wondering if you knew anything about the extended use of pain medication on the body for such thing. I take OxyContin every day, and sometimes hydrocodone to supplement that.
Is the peripheral neuropathy from your lumbar issues, or do you have diabetes? Or
I don't have diabetes.
Okay.
And there wasn't any really pinpoint thing for sure on the cause of the neuropathy.
Okay. Have you been through a pain clinic?
Yes, I have.
Okay. So I see many people who are on long-term narcotics, either oral or through a pump. And, you know, they tend to be closely monitored. Mm-hmm. I don't see a lot of long-term negative effects from those as long as they're monitored by the physician. They're watching for, you know, increased tolerance to them. So they might change up the medication now and again to prevent that creep that you tend to get with tolerance to some of those. So I'd say as long as you're under the care of a physician who's well-versed in managing long-term narcotic use, I don't see a lot of problems with that. I see a lot of people with neuropathy, and typically they're on that.
I don't have any signs that, you know, with my use that
okay.
I get loopy or anything like that.
That's okay.
You would never know I was on it.
Okay.
That's good.
All right. Well, it sounds like you're managing it well then. And I would hope that you're on an exercise program. The pool tends to be a very nice place for people who have neuropathy.
Okay.
There you go. Good luck. Thank you for calling. An email from Mike. I can relate to this one. Injured my right hamstring water skiing the last week in June. Very distinct popping sensation.
Yeah.
I've rested and stretched the hammy since the injury. still experience pain to compression to the specific area, as well as aching and swelling of the hamstring after exercise or sometimes after simple activities that require a lot of bending. Currently able to use an elliptical with only slight discomfort. What should I be doing? Mm-hmm. I did it at almost exactly the same age. Mm-hmm. I got a tip down in the water at about 50 miles an hour.
Yeah, that's a very, very common way to injure your hamstring is water skiing. It's probably one of the most common
ways. It was my last time water skiing.
Yes, it always is.
It was in June, and there went golf there with the whole summer.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's probably this individual probably ended up with all the bruising down the back of their leg and a lot of discoloration. That's not uncommon. We have three hamstring muscles in the back, so typically most people tear just one of them. They don't have a complete avulsion, which is good. But this person needs to do, it says they're doing some stretching, which is wonderful. What I'm not seeing is that they're doing any strengthening to strengthen the remaining hamstring musculature. So one of the things I would have this person do is see a physical therapist and get on a hamstring-type strengthening program to strengthen that. And along with that, the other thing is you're going to use a lot of gluteal substitution here. So this person has to have a nice butt.
No.
Good glutes.
Good glutes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and really, you know, it happened the end of June. It's now July, August, September. It's been 3 months, and he's not better. And so he really needs guidance. The dosage of this, the dosing this exercise program correctly to get him better is going to be tough. So he's going to need some good guidance.
Yeah.
Good luck. Thank you very much for that question. And thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lori Tyne Brody, Jill Tyne Nissenbaum with us right up until 12:30 today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, and nothing can ruin a vacation or outdoor activities more than a sore back or maybe a painful muscle or two. And once a month, we're fortunate to have folks with us who know a lot about staying in good shape and getting back in shape after an injury. Jill Tyne Nissenbaum is an assistant professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. And Lori Tyne Brody is a physical therapist and athletic trainer with the UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. It's great to have them with us. Certainly, if you have a question for them, I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234. And I tell you what, there are lots of people waiting to talk to you. So let's go to the phones right away. Paul in Antioch, Illinois, it is your turn. Thank you for calling.
Oh, it's my pleasure. My main problem is around, you know, usually in the early hours of the morning, like 2, 3 o'clock, I get terrific cramps in my calf. And sometimes it's, you know, left side, right side. Sometimes it's both. And what I found to be, you know, probably the only effective thing is to wrap a heating pad around that. And so I don't know what causes that. I had talked to my primary physician about it, and he said it could be hydration. Mm-hmm. It could be potassium. Mm-hmm. It could be, you know, you need to stretch. And I do take Lipitor, and he says, now, if you took Lipitor, it would happen all the time. And this only it's like a 50-50 chance, you know, every night. And it doesn't seem to make any difference if I'm out, you know, working in the garden with wheelbarrows of dirt, squatting, or, you know, doing nothing, I get this pain. And then recently, and I think it's related, is I'm a pretty brisk walker when I'm just, you know, out and about. And my left calf, I start getting a shooting pain, you know, from bottom to the top. And the more I walk, you know, the more it hurts. And sometimes I just have to stop and sit down and, you know, let it get better. So I don't know what's causing all that. But, but every morning on the left side, I wake up with like a dull ache in my left calf. And it seems when I try to touch it, and that seems to be real close to the bone. And, you know, then 2-3 hours, I kind of walk it off. But, you know, it just persists all day long almost. So,
So you really are looking at two separate issues. You have the cramping. And temporarily, when did the cramp start? Did they start after you started taking Lipitor? Or how long has this been going on? Days, weeks, months?
Years.
Oh, years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And have you been on Lipitor all that time?
I've probably been on Lipitor for over 20 years.
Okay. Well, you know, I have to say that your doctor covered the major bases. Those are the things that we talk to people about, too. That is making sure you're hydrated, making sure you have enough potassium in your diet, you know, some gentle stretching, et cetera. Do they get better if you hang your feet over the edge of the bed at night?
No.
Okay. All right. So it's probably, we were thinking it might be claudication, so that doesn't seem to be that. Right. So that's actually a good thing.
Well, you know, so one other thing that I didn't mention before, too, is that, you know, when I'm first waking up in the morning, I can almost feel it, like it's going to happen, like it's going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This isn't like in the dark hours of the morning. This is when I'm...
Sure. Right.
And if I flex my toes and my feet, it's almost like I can control it.
Happening. Yeah. Yep. Well, it could be some of those deep toe muscles. You know, those run down pretty close to your bone. You know, the other thing, do you think this could be a deep compartment syndrome of some sort?
Well, I wondered about that, although the night symptoms, you know, pain at rest didn't make me think so much about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is going to be kind of a weird question, but are your sheets tucked in very, very tightly, and are your feet really pointed at night when you sleep?
Now, well, recently I've taken a cue from my wife. I mean, I used to tuck the sheets in being ex-military.
I was just going to say ex-military. Oh, very good. Hospital corners, yep.
But anyhow, you know, she said what she does, and I started to follow suit, is not tucking them in loose and then propping up a pillow so you form like a little tent.
Uh-huh.
And that seems to have done some good. It doesn't seem to be as... Since I've started doing that, it doesn't seem to be as frequent.
Okay. Well, that's good. Yeah, you always have to wonder if the position you're in all night, if your sheets are tucked in really taut and your feet are down there at the bottom, if it's really forcing your foot into that pointed position where your muscle just gets really tight.
And do you tend to sleep in one position, like on your back or your side? Or
no, I'm a whirling dervish.
Okay, all right. Well, that's probably better.
Not for his wife.
Yeah. No. So I guess what I'd say is if you haven't seen a physical therapist, you can make an appointment to see one. And they're quite expert at doing muscle testing, and they can look at each individual muscle that goes through your calf, from your big toe flexors, extensors, your other toe flexors, extensors, all the small muscles, and see if when they do a test, you go, oh, yeah, that's the one. You know, I can feel that.
Okay.
It can help identify what muscle it is, and then they might be able to design a specific stretch or strengthening exercise or positioning for you that might help you with that at night.
Okay. And choosing a physical therapist, is there something I should be looking for? A certified something?
I'd probably look for an orthopedic clinical specialist. They're called they have an OCS behind their name.
Okay.
And if you can find somebody who specializes in foot and ankle, that would be ideal.
That would be the double bonus.
Right. If you call the clinic and just ask if there's somebody that specializes.
I have one other question. I have just a quick one here. Friends and relatives of mine say, you know, it could be your mattress. You ought to get one of these quote-unquote Tempur-Pedics. Do you have any comment on those types of mattress compared to the regular old standard mattress?
Frankly, I have one. We love ours. But I don't know whether...
Yeah. Well, I mean, a good mattress does make a difference. Whether or not it would make a difference in your calf cramping, no one could say. I mean, theoretically, if your mattress is contributing to poor posture, if there's something originating in your back, which we weren't really thinking it was probably coming from your back, then changing the mattress could have an impact. It's a pretty big intervention with sort of an iffy outcome. If you need a new mattress, if you're in need of a new mattress, getting a good one certainly makes sense.
Well, we thought we did that about a year and a half ago or a year ago.
Yeah, okay. And it didn't make any difference.
And, it didn't make any difference. And I do wake up with, you know, something at my waistline when I wake up every morning and, you know, kind of walk that off as well. But, you know, that's getting old.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I'd say go on and have a good physical therapy evaluation, and they can look at you from your spine to your feet.
And thanks a lot for calling, Paul. Michelle in Kenosha, thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you. I am confused and have a couple of questions about how does the training of a PT play into treating people who aren't injured from sports but playing musical instruments? Overuse, etc. And my daughter is in college, plays violin and cello, and has just seen a physical therapist at her university, and she has been diagnosed with tendonitis in her wrist. Mm-hmm. So I guess we are all just confused. You know, this is an immediate situation, and she's getting that treatment. But would she also see, try to see, you know, who else would she try to see, if anybody? It seems to me that not all of her teachers have always
talked about
you know, posture and all this. And so fortunately, she has a really good teacher right now who's doing that. But also, could you recommend some life exercise? She's not athletic. So, you know, you're always worried about danger to your body, your hands, or whatever. But could you recommend some life exercises that might really help help her throughout her life in this area?
Sure. Well, let's start with how the physical therapist training, and can they examine or evaluate somebody who has an overuse injury from playing a musical instrument? And the answer is absolutely yes. Physical therapists are really considered biomechanical movement experts. So any physical therapist should be able to look at the movement that someone has to do and be able to determine the loads that the joint has to take. Now, having said that, there are physical therapists who specialize in the performing arts, in evaluating patients who play musical instruments, as well as in dancers and stage performers.
Right. So the American Physical Therapy Association, the orthopedic section, has a specialty section called the Performing Arts Special Interest Group. And there are physical therapists around the country who specialize in the performing arts. So there are people here in Wisconsin who specialize in that area. So seeing somebody who deals with musicians as their vocation is the right way to go. And they would be someone who could look at your daughter and say, okay, this is your posture. These muscles are weak. These muscles are strong. You hold your head this way or that way, and make some recommendations about exercise for her. Overall, in general, I would say that for someone who plays something like the violin, you tend to have a lot of neck flexion forward. You tend to have a lot of rounding of the shoulders forward. So I'd encourage her towards a sport such as swimming, particularly on her back, where it opens up her chest and strengthens her neck and upper back muscles. But again, a physical therapist who specializes in performing arts would be able to look at her and make some specific recommendations for her.
There you go.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, yeah. Michelle. Jean in Madison. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, I appreciate this chance to just get some advice, I guess.
Okay.
I injured my knee, the inside of my knee, left knee, probably over a year ago, and I limped for 5 or 6 days, but then it seemed to go away except for when I would try to squat or sit with folded legs on the floor. Then it just kind of got better over time. About a couple of months ago, I sat on the floor for extended time with grandchildren, and it is back, mm-hmm. where it's difficult for me to squat. The pain is right along the outside of the knee, but the inside of the leg.
Mm-hmm.
Is this something that just will be there forever, or is there any value in getting it looked at, or something?
Sure. So how did you injure it the first time? We know you kind of flared it up by sitting on the floor with your grandkids. How did you injure it the first time, Jean?
I was doing some garden work where I was digging out dirt from where there was a lot of clay, and I was carrying that in a large bucket, one of those buckets, and I would move it from the outside to the inside, and I know I bumped that leg frequently as I was carrying those.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I would be concerned that you have irritation of your meniscus or a meniscal tear on that side. Just the mechanism of injury, as well as pain with squatting, you know, those kind of things make us think that there's an irritation on the inside, probably a partial tear or a small tear in your meniscus that would definitely be worth getting looked at.
Okay. Not anything. I was listening earlier. Not anything that would heal over time on its own.
Well, you know, you did get better the first time after 5 or 6 days, but now you've re-injured it, and are you, and so first of all, we know that it's a little bit volatile and you're re-injuring it. Now, this time, have you recovered as quickly?
No.
Okay.
No, and now when I walk, I try to walk frequently.
Uh-huh.
There's a little irritation where once, the first time it healed, there wasn't irritation from walking.
Okay. So it sounds to me like you need to get this evaluated.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. I appreciate that advice. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks for calling. Tom and Nelson, what can we do for you?
Yes. Hello. Thanks. I appreciate the call.
Sure.
Let me start off by saying I have peripheral artery disease, 100% blockage in both femoral arteries. Now, I lost some weight this year. I used to be a good tennis player, so I said, let's go out and try playing tennis again. And kind of blew out the calf muscle, the quadricemius, which is known
the gastrocnemius?
Tennis knee.
Yeah.
Okay.
And let's lay off of that stuff and do so on and so forth. But I still could play golf, so I'm doing that three times a week. Well, I'm hitting a ball on the 12th hole, and it's kind of a side hill lie. I'm facing the hole. Just hit it, felt nothing, got up to the green, got out of the cart, and now I have this extreme pain down at the lower portion of the calf muscle, about a third of the way up the calf. And that's kind of, I figured the two are somewhat related, and I'm not sure. The only thing is I want to go out and exercise and do what I can, but I'm afraid to say, well, should I or should I not? These both occurred about 2 to 3 weeks ago.
And you're pretty clear that these are musculoskeletal. They're not related to your peripheral artery disease?
Yeah. When the tennis thing went, I mean, that was just a bang.
Okay.
Pain, and it hurt like hell.
Okay.
The second one in the lower calf muscle, that was, I didn't feel anything when it happened, but yet it really, I mean, I could hardly walk.
Okay.
Okay.
And it's not in your Achilles, it's in the muscle itself.
It's in the muscle itself.
You can see your Achilles is still intact.
Oh yeah.
Okay. All right.
I mean, I can go up and down on my
toes
and stuff.
Perfect.
Without pain there, but there's soreness just to the inside of the shin.
Right. So, I guess I'd say you should do some gentle stretching, with your heel over the edge of a step, very gentle. It should be comfortable and not painful. And I gradually go back to something like a walking program. Anything that start and stop, direction changes, uneven surfaces are all going to be hard on your calf muscles because your muscles have to work to accommodate those uneven surfaces.
Yeah.
Hills are going to be tough.
Right.
So if you can do some walking on a trail or, as Jill suggested earlier, on a track, that's kind of the way to go to get yourself back into an exercise program. And honestly, all things considered, it's going to be kind of the way to go for the long-term health of your legs as well. Relatively level surface, mm-hmm. protected.
Forgiving surface, kind of a softer mm-hmm. surface, trying to avoid the hard concrete.
Yep. And
would it be bad if I was going to go over this afternoon and work out, and I usually go on the elliptical and so on and that kind of stuff.
I think the elliptical would be okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just worried having this, the blockage in the artery, that it's going to take longer to heal.
Yes, right.
You're right.
Much mm-hmm. longer to heal up.
So it sounds like you have the right idea about this. So
I thought mm-hmm. maybe I'd take a couple ibuprofens. I can still go over and work out.
There you go, Tom.
All right.
Thanks.
Take care. Keep at it.
And Linda and Menasha. Hi.
Hi there. I had a couple questions, actually. One is regarding my hand. I had a ganglion cyst removed, over 5 years ago. And since then, I had a bump in my pointer finger on the same hand show up and disappear. And then I had another one recently show up between my knuckles on the palm part of my hand come up and disappear.
Okay.
And is that from use of my hand? Is that just normal? Is it cysts that I'm going to maybe have to get removed again? I know you don't do cysts, but I mean, being that's my right hand that I use a lot, that's why I just wondered if it was a tendon thing.
Those are all great questions. So the original cyst you had removed was what we call a ganglion cyst, or a cyst. It was probably in the back of your hand. And you can get those removed. It's just kind of a wad of tissue that kind of forms in the sheath of a tendon. So it sounds now that you're getting them in different locations. So
it's all on the palm of my hand side, though.
It's all on the palm side of your hand now. So
the one I had removed was too.
Oh, okay, all right. So do you do an occupation or something where you're flexing your fingers a lot, or typing?
Vacuuming. I clean.
Okay. Okay, yeah, so you're using your hands all the time. So the big thing with ganglions is only if they become symptomatic where you don't feel that you can move your hands like you should, it's preventing you from opening and closing your hand, do people start getting concerned. And yeah, that fluid can come and go. It's not that hard that it can kind of move around a little bit. So that's not atypical. I would just watch them and make sure that they don't get to the point where you feel like it's affecting your hand function.
Is there something I can do to prevent them from getting bad? I suppose just not using it.
Right, really not. There's really nothing you can do. Yeah.
The other question I had quick was my foot, my both my feet. I was told I had bunionettes, and I don't wear high heels and all them kind of shoes, but I was told I would have bunionettes when I was having pain under the ball of my foot, under my toes. It felt like some twanging in there when I'd walk. Now I've been wearing good shoes for a long time, and it's better as far as the pain goes. My toes are starting to separate.
Separate which way?
Like get wider?
Like just like if I stand there, they're going apart.
Okay.
Pushing apart.
It's probably okay. It sounds to me like you maybe had what's called the Morton's Varoma from having the kind of the ball of your foot be pinched together in shoes that were perhaps a little too tight for you. It sounds like you're somebody that benefits from a wider toe box or a wider shoe in the front.
I've been wearing them for years, and that's when my toes are starting to separate after I've been wearing those.
Yeah. I think that's actually a... Yeah, I actually think that's okay.
Right.
I think most people have trouble when their toes are too close together or they're all drifting one direction or another, but having a little bit of separation between your toes tends to be healthier for your foot.
Okay. I just don't want it to end up looking really weird.
Yeah.
There you go. Thank you. Thank you very much for calling, Linda. We had a question from Erica in Oconomowoc. What can you tell us about physical therapists benefiting neurofitness seems to be a hopeful alternative for Parkinson's disease patients?
Well, generally, any kind of exercise is going to be helpful. I know they are, many places have put together fitness classes for people in certain diagnostic categories. And what they do is they tend to focus on the impairments and activity limitations that these people tend to have because of their diagnosis. So for someone with Parkinson's, they have issues with speed of movement, initiating movement. So they design an exercise program that helps address some of those things that we might address in therapy, but they do it as a preventative way. They work on balance, et cetera. So I think they're great ways to keep people active, as well as in a community of people with similar physical abilities, and helps keep them more engaged so that they're not out there with, you know, necessarily the Lycra crowd trying to keep up.
Right. It's a nice social outlet, a good way to get to interact with those folks. I know the gym that we belong to has one, and they do it solely by donation. So the classes, there's no charge for the classes. It's just a donation, and I believe the money goes to the Parkinson's Association.
Wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We have a question from Carla, wonders, what's your opinion on Rolfing? Do you see Rolfing as a viable way to alleviate lower back pain or foot issues?
Well, if the Rolfing is a form of deep tissue massage, they usually do, I think, 10 sessions, or there's a certain fixed number of sessions they do. And I haven't had it done, but my understanding is it's quite painful to actually have it done, but people feel good afterwards. And I would say that Rolfing can be good if the source of the problem is, you know, muscular adhesions, really tight muscles, scar tissue that needs to be loosened or broken up or stretched. If the problem is an underlying biomechanical issue or a strength imbalance, then Rolfing isn't going to address the underlying problem.
Exactly.
And with that, we are out of time. Gosh.
It's been a great time, and we didn't even get to your problem, Larry.
Well, hopefully by the next time you're on, it'll be gone.
It'll be better. That would be the ostrich. Stick your head in the mud and hope it goes away kind of alternative.
Oh, thank you. Lori Tyne Brody, Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, Lori's physical therapist, athletic trainer for UW Sports Medicine. Jill is an assistant professor and the doctor of physical therapy program at UW-Madison. And they come by, well, sometimes Bill and Lori come by, usually more often than not, the third Monday of every month. So the next is October 15th. Thank you for listening, and please stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.